Did you know that you can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by donating stocks, bonds, and mutual funds to Lutheran Public Radio? For more information, contact Craig at 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385. Please consider donating stocks, bonds, or mutual funds to Issues Etc. this year. Call Craig today, 618-223-8385. Thanks for your support.
All sides of the marriage equality debate would be upset with this. It essentially makes a mockery of marriage. Marriage is a really important institution about love and commitment, and it's sad to see that there are people who are making a joke out of that. This, I think, is going beyond a joke, where you've got two straight blokes essentially making a mockery of the struggle that so many gay and lesbian New Zealanders have gone through to get marriage equality laws. This is making a mockery of what has been a successful and long-fought battle in New Zealand towards marriage equality, something that they should be very proud of in New Zealand. But here we have two guys making a mockery of that.
That's Neil Ballantyne. He's Otago University Students Association Queer Support Coordinator in New Zealand. He's reacting to two friends since they were 6 years old. They're rugby fans. They want to go to the Rugby World Cup. They had an opportunity to win tickets to go to this sporting event, but they were only giving this out to married couples, and they figured that's easy. We'll just get married. They are not gay. They're straight. But in order to win rugby tickets, they decided they would get married. And guess what? This weekend, they did get married, and they might even get to go and watch a rugby game together. Now, Neil Ballantyne says this makes a mockery of all the efforts that gay activists have been doing to afford themselves marriage rights. Is this simply inevitable when you start redefining marriage for some? You're going to redefine marriage for everybody and anybody who wants to work within that new definition. Welcome back to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morris will join us to respond to this story about two straight men who decided to get married in order to win rugby tickets. And then a little bit later, Pastor Tom Baker will join us to teach a Sunday school lesson. We'll be talking about Genesis chapter 3, the fall into sin. Join us, if you would, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or for our beloved on-demand listeners, you can always use the Issues Etc. comment line any time of day or night, 618-223-8382. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morris is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she is author of the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
I know you hate to say it, but you told us so, didn't you?
Well, as a matter of fact, back in 2010, I wrote a little story about what the world would look like when we remove the gender requirement from marriage. And all the characters in the story were straight, right? And the point of the story was to show that redefining marriage is not just something that's going to affect people who are sexually attracted to people of the same sex. It's going to affect everybody. You change the law, you change the law for everyone. And in order to have any kind of reasonable idea of what we're doing when we change that law, we ought at least give a moment's thought to what it will do to the behavior of everybody who's not gay. And so that's a part of the discussion that I thought needed to happen, never happened, and now everybody's wringing their hands and acting surprised that two guys got married in order to get rugby tickets.
See, I don't get why they don't think this is, well, I can understand why someone wouldn't think it's funny. You know, I can understand that. But I don't understand why they're offended, why the gay activists are offended by this. Because, I mean, they have been telling us that people ought to be able to marry whoever for whatever reason they
fit. That's exactly right. They were throwing smoke in our eyes to say that it's all about love all the time, and that's all it's about. And that's a diversion from the real issue. The real issue is that You're changing the definition of marriage. You're changing it for everybody. It will affect everybody. And love is not now, nor has it ever been, a legally defined term. And I don't think anybody in the right mind would want it to be a legally defined term, you know? So the whole discussion has taken place by sort of obfuscation and diversionary tactic, you know, by putting it up there as if the only thing that's going to happen is two people who love each other as much as you and your wife love each other, they now get to get married, and that's the only thing that's at stake here. That's been a big diversion from asking the real question of what is it going to mean to society as a whole if you no longer have a gender requirement for marriage. Of course, the other thing that this story demonstrates, Todd, is that marriage already has been redefined 40 years ago when we removed the presumption of permanence from marriage, because it's obvious these two guys would not have chosen to get married for rugby tickets if we had not already had no-fault divorce or some easy exit option out of marriage, right? There's no way they would be getting married for a frivolous reason like that. And I'm guessing that there's no way the gay activists would be pressing so hard for so-called marriage equality rights if there were not already pretty easy exit options out of married life. So that redefinition is also extremely important part of this story. And as you know, the Ruth Institute, and I know the Lutheran Church, the Missouri Synod Lutherans are united in the point that that was a big misdirection way back then, that that should never have happened, and that that too has been a disaster, just as we predicted back then that it wouldn't be a good thing, and that we should be undoing that step of the sexual revolution rather than taking further and more radical steps of sexual revolutionary action.
Well, this is interesting. I want you to explain that to our listeners. I know we've talked about it in previous conversations, but it's always worth walking over that ground again to make sure we understand that. I guess answer this question. Why should the state have an interest, a legally codified interest in the permanence, as you said, the presumption of permanence in marriage? We obviously can't make it absolute, but why does the state have an interest in making it hard to divorce?
Yes, because marriage is the social institution. Right up until 5 minutes ago, marriage was a social institution where children came into being. A man and a woman come together, and their love could produce a child. And the child, it is a recognition that the child has a legitimate interest in the stability of their parents' union. If you believe, as I do, if you believe, as I think every professing Christian ought to believe, that a child has an entitlement to a relationship with both of their parents, that the relationship between parent and child is a sacred relation given to us by God and deserving of respect, the state has an interest in helping to create a structural system that will protect the child's interest in having access to both of their parents. And no-fault divorce completely obliterated that. No-fault divorce said that marriage is about adults and their feelings, and it's not about children's entitlements to relationship with their parents at all. The child's rights can be sacrificed for the benefit of adults, and that is a structural injustice to children, and it's entirely objectionable. And that's the thing, in a sense, that has made marriage trivial. You know, you played the clip from the gay activist saying, you know, that this is trivializing marriage somehow. Well, the fact is the state has no interest in whether two rugby buddies continue to be friends for 2 years, 5 years, or not at all. The state has no interest in whether buddies continue to be buddies. The only reason the state is interested at all is because of these helpless creatures called children who do have some rights that would otherwise be violated by misbehaving adults. That's why you have marriage in the first place. And I've been saying for years that if you remove the procreative purpose for marriage, there's no longer any real public purpose to marriage at all. What's left is basically a shell that is already something trivial. And so the fact that these two rugby buddies are getting married to one another is simply demonstrating what had already taken place, which is that the substantial meaning of marriage has been removed.
Now, another point that you make in responding to this is that gay activists and their wealthy patrons, and I like the way that you make sure that we do understand that this is a well-funded minority that has been just unbelievably successful, really, in terms of the the actual, you know, number of people involved here, if not the money. Unbelievably successful. The gay activists and their wealthy patrons are surprised that they don't get to control what everyone does and why they do it. They're outraged that these two guys can marry just because they want rugby tickets.
Right, right. I don't know what they're thinking. You know, I mean, this is a problem of the Friedrich Hayek used to call it the fatal conceit. The conceit of intellectuals that their intellectual system could be implemented on society and that everybody would march in lockstep to whatever that intellectual system was, you know. Well, the fact is every person in society has motives of their own, ideas of their own, desires of their own, and there's no one who can control all of that, you know. And so the question you have to ask is, when we change a law, what incentives are we putting into place? What forces are we putting in motion? And given the human condition as it really is, what are people likely to do in the new circumstance? That's, I think, what you should be doing to analyze a public policy change. And no one has ever really done that in a serious way around the redefinition of marriage. We've been given a handful of talking points that we're allowed to think about and talk about. And the advocates of marriage redefinition, the sexual revolutionaries, have been very skillful at pruning out any discussion that's on any other topic. And so this topic of, well, gosh, anybody can get married for any reason they want. What do we care about that? Is that a problem? Do we really want to do that? You know, kind of thing. Instead of ever having that discussion, the discussion is Dr. Morse is a mean person. They really hate us. That's all you're allowed to talk about. And it goes so far as to, even in some of the court cases, the judges will control who counts as an expert witness and who's allowed to testify. You know, I can remember a couple of cases where very well-qualified people who had some very interesting things to say were excluded. The judge said, I don't consider this person a credible witness. I don't consider this important topic. And so I wouldn't hear what they had to say, you know. So that process of channeling the whole discussion down one or two well-worn paths, that has been the pattern, and that has been the way in which this has taken place. But the fact is, now that the marriage has been redefined, all these other factors that we've been talking about all along, they're all going to come into play. You know, you can't really make everybody's motives change. You can't really change the human condition. You can't really change the fact that kids want their moms and dads and all these other issues that we talk about. And so that's going to flare up and bubble up to the surface. And now we're going to have to deal with people and situations where people have made decisions based on very incomplete information, based on a very, kind of distorted public conversation. And we're going to have really more victims of the sexual revolution.
Two final things. Do you think that the advocates of redefining marriage would be as outraged by these two characters down in New Zealand getting married for rugby tickets if they were same-sex attracted, if they were a gay couple, but they just wanted rugby tickets?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't want to try to predict. My instinct and yours, I suppose, is that they wouldn't be so upset about it. But I don't know if that's the case.
Okay. What about those two guys? Because, look, it's not as though I want to spend my time getting outraged. I don't have enough time to be outraged at everything that's in the world. But there should be someone who takes a little time, because the guys are making a mockery of marriage, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, they really
are.
What would you say of them?
Well, you know, they seem like nice chaps. To me, you know, they're 23 years old, I think. 23, 24 years old, isn't that right? Is that what I remember from the story?
Yeah.
I mean, they're just kids. They're just kids. And their energies are being channeled down this course that can't possibly do them any good long term. I mean, what's it going to do to their friendship when they decide they don't want to be married anymore? What's going to happen to their friendship when they decide, gosh, I really would like to marry this girl over here? You know, but I have no idea what this is going to be like for them, you know? But the society and the culture has given them so many mixed signals that marriage is important. No, it's not. You can do it for any reason you want. Oh, it's a big party. Oh, it's a big laugh. How about the rugby? These poor guys, they don't have a clue. They don't have a clue. And in that sense, I feel as an adult member of society a responsibility to make sure that at least some young people in my immediate vicinity do get a clue that there's something more significant at stake here than our immediate feelings and our immediate desires, that marriage has just so much more at stake. And honestly, the whole debate and discussion over the redefinition of marriage has served to obscure that very badly.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. Jen taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's authored the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. You will find a link to the website and the blog for the Ruth Institute under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Jennifer, thank you.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Tom Baker, as we do every week, teaching a Sunday school lesson today. The fall, sin enters the world, Genesis chapter 3. It's all there, all in its tragic, tragic reality in the third chapter of the book. We'll be there with Pastor Tom Baker after this.
Hymnody is important, very important. It's an invaluable tool that helps teach and confess the faith. Singing hymns is something we all do together on a weekly basis, yet some congregations find it difficult to sing confidently without the support of an instrument. If you are one of these congregations that can't find an organist, Church Music Solutions can help. Our substitute organist service allows your hymns and liturgy to be played on your instrument to help inspire and support your congregation's song. Keep singing with Church Music Solutions.
Do you have a hard time finding Christian greeting cards and gifts that aren't either sappy or theologically suspect? Ad Crucem offers the perfect combination of art and the truth of the Scriptures with beautiful and reverent greeting cards and gifts. Deliver the true comfort of the gospel, Christ crucified for sinners, to family and friends with Ad Crucem. ADCRUCEM.com. Confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com.
Talk radio for the Christian worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.